Now, the HSE crisis in Ireland, and as we all know, it is not only relating to the lack of beds in our hospitals or patients on trolleys, other patients waiting for a trolley or the long waiting lists, but many other issues as well, and in particular what we're going to talk about today, the inability of HSE to recruit new doctors and consultants and also retain our existing staff. And I'm now joined by Councillor Keane O'Callaghan, Andrew Keegan from People Before Profit to speak about all of this in more detail. So good afternoon, Andrew, and thanks for joining us. Yeah, sorry about that on the name thing. First of all, Andrew, may I ask you, what's the root cause of the HSE's recruitment and retention crisis? Is it solely and only about salaries and the package?
Well, it is about that to a certain extent. But in reality, a lot of medical professions, doctors, nurses and so forth, and even the frontline staff, ambulance workers and stuff like that, paramedics and the like, well, I'll tell you that the wage they're on now, they would have no problems with staying if the environment within the hospital wasn't as bad as it is. So even if they took a pay cut, they would still stay and work within the health service. So there's a huge amount of issues. There's like, well, I suppose it's all really health and safety. For example, there's nurses on night shifts where they're looking after 13 to 15 beds, and they're the only nurse when they should have about four nurses. There's nurses treating patients on trolleys. So it's an issue there for the staff and for the patient. And really, you can have people on trolleys being treated for 10, 20, 30 hours, which is just, you know, you have patients and families all distressed, as well as the staff. So that in itself, if the investment within the health service was put in properly, the facilities that they had that they work in were improved, then I think a lot of staff wouldn't go. But if you have if you want to talk about salaries and stuff like that, they reckon the English speaking countries such as say Australia, UK, Canada, which would be the most popular for Irish professionals to go to. To work in hospitals and so forth. All these countries have shortages of nurses and doctors, and they're just, you know, snapping up all air doctors. But on average, you can have 5 to 20%, some case 25% difference in what paid in Ireland and what you'll get there. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer. There was a comment from the president of the IMO. He said the reason why doctors are choosing to leave Ireland and not to return is simple. He says it's about being able to work in a system where you have the resources and support to do the job. So they do the job what they're trained for. So they can't do the job what they're trained for because there's a lack of investment. And if you want to look at say, infrastructure, hospitals and so forth, and the way it's managed, 80%, at least 75 to 80% of the budget that the HSE has goes on wages. That leaves 20%, right, 20%, to invest in whatever, you know, whether it be ambulances, open up new wards, get the beds open, stuff like that. So it's underfunding. Because if you open up one bed, it's not just a question of opening up whatever a bed costs, but to run that bed, and depending on the type of bed, to run that bed can be ending from 35 to 45,000. This is the reluctance to open up beds. They're quite happy to maintain, you know, people on a trolley. Having somebody on a trolley has, you know, massive implications for staff and patients, but to open up a bed, it affects their budget and they don't have the budget. So if we have, we have 17 billion, we have 7.6% of our GDP, which is below the average. The average for Europe is 10%, 12%. Obviously, some of the more wealthy countries would be better than that. But typically, like the UK, their health service, which you would deem to be better than ours, will be on anything 10 to 12% of GDP. So paying out money to agencies and stuff like that is just sucking the budget dry. But we do need to, you know, invest in our hospitals so we can, if we do invest in the staff, they'll stay. That's a no-brainer. It's crucial.
Okay. Is it true that in some instances doctors are being hired even though they are unqualified? Like, and in other cases, underqualified doctors are being appointed to positions like way above their level of training.
Yeah. Well, see, it's all down to management, where they don't do the due diligence on a particular person. They have panels where they, you know, they do all the interviews on all these various different doctors, professionals, and put on the panel. But the due diligence gets slipped, and then you have a crisis where something happens with a patient. Patient puts in a claim, then all of a sudden it turns out that the particular person is not actually qualified. He's bogus or never finishes. He has some, obviously, some training, but he's way out of his depth in the position that he went into. So that does happen, but that's a management issue, right? To control that, that's a HR issue. So whatever about somebody trying to get more money, whether they're qualified or not, is immoral. But certainly, you have to point the fingers at the management on that one. And yeah, that's just one instance. Really, we would call for the HSE to be disbanded, to stop working, and you know, to be more localised. Because in reality, when we had the four health regions, it worked, and they broke it up and brought it together, and now it doesn't work. So, you know, don't touch something if it's working. That's the moral on this. As far as the HSE is concerned, there's no, you know, appetite within the government to fund it properly. And really, you know, we have health minister from Coveney to the guy we have now, Harris. None of them are interested in the health service investment because they want to run it down. And as far as I'm concerned, or my party's concerned, people are probably concerned, there's an agenda to privatise it. Say, oh, well, it's not working, we need to privatise it and make it more efficient. That is, to go down the American model will never, never work. But the model we have now is a three-tier model. You know, we have you can access the health service as a private patient, semi-private, or with insurance, or just as a, you know, job logs, just go into A&E and see what happens. And there is a massive inequality now in our health service in relation to you know, patients looking to get treatments, whether it be a hip, heart, or just you know, simple procedure, I'd say a broken wrist or something like that. But at the end of the day, staff that are, the wages have been cut through Fenty by 20%. A lot of them feel that they have 10 days now to fill out, which they don't get paid for. And they're feeling, well, they're working very, very hard, and actually their wages and conditions are being reduced. And the conditions, there's no investment. There's no new hospitals. There's no real investment in their workplace. And that's the key issue why doctors are just saying, no, I've had enough, I'm going. And they'll get better elsewhere. And that's the key thing.
Yeah, and as you say that, last year over 300 Irish-trained doctors immigrated to Australia, and most of them in their 20s and 30s. And Dr. Niamh Humphreys travelled there on behalf of the Royal College of Physicians in Ireland and interviewed 51 of them. Now, I'm going to speak more than I should here, Andrew, sorry, but just to give some examples. Like, one doctor said, as frustrating as the Irish health system is for patients who experience long waits for treatment, it's difficult for the doctors who are trying to care for them. It's the constant apologising for the state of the place. Yeah. Like, sorry, you've been waiting for your appointment. Sorry, your CT scan is not going to happen again today. Another doctor said, the Irish health service isn't functioning for anyone. It's not functioning for the staff nor the patients, and that's why people leave. They also mentioned the impact of overcrowding in their work environment, pure overcrowding. And it was just dangerous. There's no other way to put it. You're there as a junior doctor trying to see all the patients, but then patients are also lined up on trolleys close to you, and you're trying to write up your notes, and you've got people on trolleys, which is unacceptable. So within about 6 months of my job here... Just to let me finish. Within 6 months of my job here, this doctor said, I think just starting to enjoy it again. The different lifestyle, the hours were different, the work was different. I think I just sort of enjoyed it for the first time in years, to be honest. Enjoyed medicine and enjoyed my job. So these doctors felt that the Australian health system worked more efficiently around them, combined with the high staffing levels enabled them to do their job well. Most of them mentioned the ease of getting things done in Australia, particularly in relation to diagnostics. In other words, if you want a scan, the scan happens. I don't have to argue with anyone to get it. I don't have to have the patient sitting in the bed for 3 days waiting for it. It just happens. So in your experience, could we have, Andrew, a better system like this in Ireland? Can you see this happening?
Firstly, we're so far behind. We've mismanaged the health service for so long now. And the lack of investment over the last 20 years is so... You know, it's phenomenal that the $17 billion that's spent now on the health service, that has to double. It's a no-brainer. If you say we've only got 20% invested in our infrastructure, which just gets sucked up, you know, disappears. Like, I mean, 80% just goes on staff, and some of that is going to private agencies. Like, there's huge money going to private agencies, hundreds of millions being paid to these companies. Like, I think last year it was $176 million just paid to private agencies. So we have to invest in the infrastructure, and we also have to invest in the staff. Now, the key thing is, like, if you think about it, all the gaps that we're talking about, all these doctors that we train here, they just go away and never come back. Some come back, but most of them don't. And if they do come back, they you know, they do something else probably. But we have 4 out of every 10 doctors is a foreign doctor. They brought in as when they use as war courses to stem the toy that the exit of doctors. So you know, it's constantly putting out fires. Management are constantly putting out fires, and really, the Department of Health, right, have to say, well, okay, we're going to have to do something. But nobody, none of them is willing to do anything to it. And until the workplace improves, really, we're not going to get our doctors back. Because if you've a doctor, you've a man or a woman that trains as a doctor, they'll start off at about 50 grand a year. They'll work, you know, all hours that God gives them. And then they pop their head up and look and say, they're doing some procedure. There's no privacy. All the family around. There's other families, people there. And he just said, like, this is, you know, it's called a war zone. And it is a war zone. Because, like, we all are passionate about a health service, John. And you felt you had to speak there. And the reason is, we want the health service that works for everybody. I spent 13 hours with my mother in A&E. The staff were brilliant. But my mother was on a trolley for 13 hours, and they gave her a bed. The bed happened to be an empty bed that was allocated for private treatment. So we have this hold on, those beds there, they're lying empty because of our private, and you have people on trolleys. Now, that's just one bizarre example that says, well, what are you doing? So we have this kind of Frankenstein health service that nobody can access. You know, if you wanted to get, I talk to my constituents on a regular basis. I met a woman there during the last political campaign there for the referendum, and she's waiting 2 years for a hip replacement. The woman can't even go upstairs. Like, it's crazy. You shouldn't have that. There's a colleague of mine. He lives in Belgium, and he's getting he was diagnosed in August for cancer treatment, and he's having the operation 3 months later. No waiting. That's it. You get the operation, and you get on with it. So there's massive inefficiencies, but also there's massive lack of investment. And I personally, I think the agenda is to run it down, say, look, it's not working, and privatise the whole thing. And we'll end up with a medical model where nobody will be able to access the health service, not unless you're wealthy enough. You know?
Won't be able to afford it.
That's the biggest fear, yeah.
You mentioned foreign doctors. Is it true, in your opinion, that foreign doctors no longer want to work in the Irish hospitals?
There is a case now. It's very, very, they even have difficulty. They bring the doctors in. They love it here, and they after about a year they get burnt out and they say, right, they just give up. And there's as many foreign doctors leaving, going back to wherever they came from, whether it be England or Australia or God knows where. There's a big issue there now. But with all staff, you know what I mean? And look, we have one of the youngest populations now. I think I mentioned to you earlier that we have midwives now going astray because they're not being treated properly. There's a massive shortage of midwives, and we have the highest birthing population in Europe. Like, you would think that if we have all these populations, we have an aging, massive aging population, especially in this city, was going to double over the next 20 years. Geriatric doctors, there is a shortage of them. So every sector you look at, every speciality you look at, we have a shortage, we have a crisis in staff. Also, where do we put them? And then, if you look at, mental health care, it's a joke in this country. Like, do not have mental problems. But we have the highest rate of mental problems because of austerity. People, having economic woes and so forth, losing their jobs and getting mental problems as a result. And we have 3,000 children who are in homeless conditions now, and they're all going to have mental health issues into the future. And we do not have a functioning or proper functioning mental health system. So, right across the board, we have a massive problem that really has to be taken back down to the basics and rebuilt. And certainly the HSE has to be broken up because the way it's working now, it's not working.
Yeah, funny enough, the HSE... Yeah, but strange though, the HSE confirmed that there are currently 350 vacant consultants posts in the public health sector. However, the IMO are saying that this number is likely to be closer to 500. But surely the government and the HSE need to find incentives and ways to fill these positions. What's your view on that?
The average consultant earns over 200 grand a year. Now, to me, that should be a good enough incentive. But the issue is the self-employment aspect of consultants. So they're running a private practice, and then they're using public facilities to to run that private. So they're using theatres in public hospitals to run a private practice. That has to stop. If they want to be private consultants and so forth, I've no problems with that. But if they're employed by the HSC, really they should only be employed by the HSC and run their speciality within the public service. They can't run private and public. And it's unfair. They're professionals. Like, it's unfair on them, really. I know, they can make a choice. You know what I mean? Like in construction, for example, which is where I work, I can work for a guy or they can be self-employed. Same thing. You can't do both. But in the medical sector, they can do both. And in one case, there was a consultant. He was being paid by the Limerick training hospital. And he never turned up. He was getting paid. So that's just one element. I'm not saying all consultants are like that. Most consultants I've ever talked to are fine individuals. But they need to be treated properly too. And if you want to keep consultants, you have to be fair and straight. And says, no, we'll employ you properly. We'll give you good conditions. And we have the patients and the specialities that you want to deal with. You can deal with it. But if you want to do private practice, here you can go and do private practice on your own. So we have this two-tier system in relation to dealing with people, how they access consultants. And that's not working. The case of a woman waiting 2 years for two hip replacements, she has to stay downstairs because she can't go up. Like, that all has to stop. It impacts on our society. So we have to be fair with consultants and say, look, it's one or the other, not both, because it's not working.
And not only the consultants, some of the young NCHDs, the very future of our health system, are facing ongoing problems with their intern year, trying to get paid their due entitlements, particularly in relation to overtime. So that doesn't help matters, does it?
No, they should scrap the internships. Forget it. If somebody goes to work, they should get paid. As far as internships in any sector, in any industry, forget about it. It's just exploitation. It's they're taking the piss, really. You know, the guys, they've just done a thing. They've just trained and, let them get on with it, you know what I mean? So,
it's just
exploitation.
And some news that came in yesterday, the HSC implemented only 10 of 36 recommendations following the Ombudsman investigation in 2015, mainly to do with, I think, complaints issues, I beg your pardon. That doesn't help matters either.
No,
in the circumstances.
What that does then is that puts pressure then on doctors to be probably overcautious, or they don't feel that the government have their back, or there's just problems there. That if they make a mistake or something like that, it can happen. So all of a sudden there's, and the impact is that doctors then are covering up things because they're afraid of their career is going to be ruined. But everything was open. So like, people make mistakes. We've all made mistakes in our lives. If you make a mistake and it's not life-threatening, I say, look, I'm not going to make a mistake there. This is what we're going to do and whatever. But straight away, if something happens, the management seems to cover up. And you have to be fair to the professionals. They're dealing with living beings. They're dealing with people. And
people's lives. People's lives,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's very, very complex. But you have to be straight. So if there's a fear, and as you say, like they've only dealt with some of the issues, but if there's a fear with these professionals that they can't be straight with the patients, then straight away that there's a problem, isn't it? You know, they have this ethic, haven't they, that where they have to be straight and give the best care they can. And if there's obstructions to that proper care and open care, then it's not fair on the professionals, is it?
No, absolutely. Okay, Andrew, we have to leave it at that. Time has caught up with us. Thanks again for taking the time to be with us today, and the
absolutely
very best
no
of
problem.
Luck with all your endeavours.
My various endeavours and activities.
Yeah.
Cheers, Andy. Good luck.
All the best, Andrew. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Now, that was Councillor Andrew Keegan, People Before Profit. I got the name right that this time. Talking about the government's failure to recruit and retain our doctors in the health service.